Hello, everybody. This is episode 51 of the Red Sox Unfiltered podcast. I am your host, Patrick Green. Excited to be back after a little bit of an absence there from 50. I got my lovely co-host here, who's always here, always ready to talk Red Sox, Dave Latham. Dave, say hi to everybody.
How's it going, everyone? I hope you're not watching the Red Sox right now.
Yeah, it's we are recording during the Red Sox Yankee game. The Chris Sale one. You'll probably listen to this well after this has actually occurred. But yeah, it's 4-1 right now. It's not looking great. DJ LeMahieu, I just don't really like him after today. He's pretty good. But yeah, it's not fun. Hopefully we can mount a comeback during this podcast. That would be cool. But also joining me is our lovely co-host and producer, who's always there, Chris Drozy. Chris.
Hey.
And that is his signature hey. His signature lovely hey that he always gives, and we are happy to have it back. And then we've got our special guest today who writes for RedSoxUnfiltered.com, making his debut on the podcast, Julian Fletcher. Julian, say hi to everybody.
What's going on, everybody? It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, we're happy to have Julian on for episode 51. He's a great writer on Red Sox Unfiltered. You got to check him out over there. Julian, what's your Twitter handle so people can follow you if they're listening?
I'm taking a Twitter cleanse at the moment.
Okay.
I deactivated the account just to focus on other things.
Good. But, Julian, what's your home address so people can follow you that way?
Yeah, that works.
I'm in North Carolina with Patrick, but I'll leave it at that.
Yeah, we have two of the four people here are from North Carolina, which is weird because, you know, there's a lot of people who write for the site that are not from the New England area and are in fact from the Carolinas. We have a Carolina coalition, and it's awesome. Wasn't meant to be like this, but that's just how it shake out. But yeah, guys,
I think you did that on purpose.
I wish I could say I did. A lot of the Carolina people actually contacted us. I didn't contact them. You can find that in the receipts. but yeah, it just shakes out that way, and it's nice to have people who know what cookout is. And we have a nice bond. But yeah, let's get this show started because again, we haven't been. I don't even know when episode 50 aired, but it's been a while. We've had three different series happen, and a fourth that is currently going on that we would like to talk about. But the thing is, there has been a lot that's been going on that's going to be worth talking about, and I'm sure we all have a lot on our minds about the Red Sox. So, first of all, the Red Sox-Toronto Blue Jays, this feels like a long time ago, but it was kind of like a momentum swing. I think the Red Sox lost the first or second game of that series, and then they kind of finished the last two out in good fashion, and they took the series 3 out of 4. I remember that was back in the day when we thought Ryan Weber might be the fifth man of the future. Hector Velasquez was gone. He was going to save the day. He pitched 6 innings of one earned run baseball, and I think the series finale, and then obviously Cleveland happened, and that's no longer the case. But yeah, guys, I don't know if anyone has any fleshed out thoughts on the Blue Jays series that they would like to talk about. I mean, it happened so long ago, too. But I'll start with Dave. Dave, do you have anything you'd like to talk about from that series?
To be honest, it's been so long, I kind of forget what happened.
I remember Ryan Weber.
Oh, yeah, that was the Weber. He went, 6 innings, 1 run, something like that, really good.
Yeah, that was all I remember. I remember Devers hit a bunch of home runs. And everything's coming back. Devers hit 4 home runs, I believe, in that series. And JBJ is back, and he hit a couple long balls too, which was really cool. And we're going to talk about him ad nauseum later because I have a lot to say about JBJ. We always have a lot to say about JBJ. He's a very big point of contention over here, but we'll save that for a second. What about you, Chris? Anything on the Blue Jays series you want to mention before we get into the Astros?
The Blue Jays have really great uniforms.
Yeah, they are pretty cool. I'm not going to quote.
I don't remember any of the series. I
feel like we. Yeah.
Oh, and
I feel like other stuff. Way more important things have happened more recent than the Blue Jays.
Well, one thought though, Vlad Jr. is definitely going to be the second best third baseman in the AL East for the next 15 years.
That gives me a good question for you guys. After I'll get to Julian in a second about the Blue Jays series, but I know we had Vlad Guerrero for Toronto, obviously showcasing his stuff, but we also had Michael Chavis for the Red Sox. These guys are probably going to compete for the AL Rookie of the Year. Who do you think is going to pull this out based on early returns? I know Chavis is kind of slowing down a little bit, and Vlad Guerrero is kind of getting on a hot streak. But what do you guys think about that? Julian, I'll start with you. What do you think about Vlad Guerrero versus Michael Chavis? Guerrero was even quoted as saying that he thinks Chavis could be the Rookie of the Year this year.
I was going to say, I think it's going to be a fun race, close to the one that Judge and Benintendi put up a few years ago, and not to that scale, but I definitely think that it's going to be a tight one. And I like Chavis as the early favorite because Toronto's going to be sellers at the trade deadline, and Vlad Guerrero is going to have less protection in the Blue Jays lineup than Michael Chavis is going to have hitting with guys like Rafael Devers and Mookie Betts and JD Martinez in his lineup. So, I think for that reason, he's going to have the edge early on. And I'm not going to go out on a limb and say that he's the more talented player than Guerrero Jr., but I definitely think that for Rookie of the Year, Michael Chavis is the leading favorite, and we're in for an exciting race.
Yeah,
and as far as the Toronto series,
yeah, go ahead.
I was just gonna say, as far as the Toronto series, I it's been a while. I don't have much to say about it except we won 3 of 4. We did what we were supposed to do, and as far as moving forward, as long as we take care of the games that we're supposed to take care of, I think our playoff chances are very strong. And once we get to October, Alex Cora will work his magic.
Yeah, and we beat a team that the Red Sox should have beat because the Blue Jays are objectively pretty bad at baseball. So it was nice that they actually took 3 of 4. Wish they could have done that in subsequent series against harder teams. But yeah, Blue Jays series happened and it was nice. But in terms of Chavis and Guerrero, I'm going to just kind of talk real quick about that. Chavis already has a really nice head start. He has a 127 WRC plus and 1 WAR. Vlad Guerrero struggled really early. I think most people remember that. He didn't get out to the start that a lot of people thought he would. He's at a 90 WRC plus and a 0.0 F WAR. So Chavis has a good head start heading into it. And again, there's probably some rookies I'm forgetting right now. It's not just these two, but if we're going Chavis versus Guerrero, Chavis, nice little start. What about you, Dave?
I'm going to give it to Vlad just because, like you said, he did have a slow start, but it's also June. Samples are really small right now. Chavis caught fire at the start of the season, and he's definitely a legit major leaguer. He's going to be around for a while. But Vlad Jr. is the best prospect basically since Alex Rodriguez. He's already figuring it out. He's starting to get hot. I think he's going to carry it to the end of the year and really take off as one of the next great young stars in baseball. Chavis might be able to win it because, like, the voters kind of favor the Red Sox over, like, small market teams like the Blue Jays, and the Red Sox should have a better record at the end of the year, and voters take into account is the guy on a playoff team, which I don't think they should, but they do. Chavis might win it for that, but I think Vlad Jr. is going to have the better year, like, overall.
Yeah, I think fortunately voters are starting to get away from that a little bit, but not as much as they should. So, yeah, I think that'll definitely factor into it. Chris, what about you? What do you think about this Chavis versus Vlad Guerrero potential Rookie of the Year race?
Vlad Guerrero Jr. hasn't really picked it up.
No.
No, because I was just looking at it. He hasn't really, like, been lighting the world on fire. He's been better than when he first started out, but Chavis still has the edge even in the areas where he would, you just look at slash lines for the past 14 days, 245, 315, 429 for Chavis with an OPS of 743, last 14 for Vlad, 256, 289, 442, 731 OPS.
Good so splits.
Close for that, but mm-hmm. I don't know. It's going to be close. And there's only a 7-game difference. They've one's played 35, the other one's played 28.
Yeah, good numbers there, Chris. It's cool. I haven't really checked on him that much. I know he got out of the slump. He was in a really bad slump at the beginning, so Yeah, that's good numbers.
Yeah, he's doing better than when he first came up, but not light years better.
Yeah. He's not going on like a JBJ stretch in the past 14 games. I hear what you're saying.
Oh, jeez.
Okay, I'm going to stop this before it gets out of hand. Let's move on to the Red Sox-Astros series. This was another heartbreaking series because the Red Sox had two games that they could have won that were decided by one run. Like, whenever the Red Sox play the Astros, I think, what is it, four? There have been four games that have been decided by one run against the Astros, and three of them have gone for losses for the Red Sox. That's not sustainable. And I think Dave was the one who tweeted it out on the Red Sox Unfiltered Twitter account, like, look, the thing is, the good news is the Red Sox have the ability to beat them. They're just shooting themselves in the foot on, like, the small things. I think that was you. Was that you, Dave?
Yeah, that Something was me. Effect. Yeah, basically, the Red Sox have the talent to beat the best team in baseball that was coming in incredibly hot. And the Red Sox did just as much to beat themselves as the Astros did to beat the Red Sox. It's so many stupid little mistakes that this is just so uncharacteristic of a team this talented. And if you're asking me which team's the more talented when both are going full speed, because the Astros didn't have Altuve either, that's something you got to point out. I'd say it's the Astros, but the Red Sox are good enough to beat them in like a best of five, best of seven series down the line. It just, they're so close and they're just getting in their own way so much. And it's so infuriating. But at the same point, it's not like this team just is physically incapable of it. They have the ability to do it. They just haven't.
Yeah. And I think that, what really hurt my heart was the second game when Matt Barnes blew the save and the lead, because, you know, I know every pitcher has, you know, a bad outing and no one's infallible, but Matt Barnes was my guy, and this kind of really hurt my heart because I thought he was the one guy who was immune from, you know, sucking for a little bit. And I mean, he did against a tough lineup and it was only one run, but yeah, that was not a fun game when the Astros walked the Red Sox off after coming back and taking the lead in the top of the ninth. And then the day before, when you have like 10 different errors from they had a bunch of errors in the first game and they really, really screwed themselves. What about you, Chris? What would you see from the Red Sox-Astros series that you'd like to talk about? Because there is a lot here. What would you see?
I had thoughts. Hold on a second. I wrote them down.
You have written coherent thoughts.
Sometimes I have to write my coherent thoughts down so they remain coherent.
I try so much harder with this thing than I do.
And me too. I'm proud of you, Chris.
You know what, guys? He's the one who put
down the rundown for the show too. So thank you, Chris. You make this dream possible.
I think the dumbest thing about that series was that they won the one game that they should not have won against Verlander. That's what I wrote.
Don't hate on Devers. Devers fathered Justin Verlander at the age of -22.
What? I had to think about that. Did you say -22?
Well, yeah, Verlander's 22 years older than Devers, but Devers owns the guy.
He's 22 years older than Devers?
That's not true.
No, it's
You're
the joke.
You're being hyperbolic.
That, it's the joke that Devers is 12 and Verlander's like 34 or whatever he is right now.
Now that we're up to date.
I don't know if that means that we were just stupid and we didn't get that, or I don't know. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. That did not hit me at first, but yeah, that was funny. Sorry we ruined that.
Edit it out. We can make it.
We can make it funny. Just put a laugh track in the background, Chris. where this is supposed to go.
My boy Devers gets it done, and that's another thing. They would have won that game that Barnes blew if a Devers home run didn't count as a double.
Yeah.
One run loss, and that's the run.
That was the one. Yeah, that's a good point too. Rafael Devers, even when the Red Sox have not been great, he's been great. What about you, Julian? What did you see from this Astros-Red Sox series that you'd like to comment on?
Well, you know, I think it's reflective of how close these teams are, as Chris pointed out. And you know, I'm glad we were able to beat Verlander. I think the other games, which came down to the wire will, in the postseason, favor the stronger pitchers, which I think are on our side. I mean, I think that we have more postseason experience collectively than the Astros in terms of the pitching. I mean, they've got some very strong pitchers. But, you know, I think long-term, I like, as long as we can get into the playoffs, I like our chances against them. I'm trying to keep it optimistic, but, you know, it's one of several series where we'll see the Astros again, if it's not in the regular season, then in the postseason. And, you know, I was pleasantly surprised with how E-Rod fared against them in that series against Verlander. If we can get that out of him, if we can get a Chris Sale start out of Chris Sale, if we can get David Price pitching in the postseason like he was last year, then, you know, everything else will fall into place.
Yeah, and I think that you bring up a really good point about Eduardo Rodriguez out-dueling Justin Verlander, for lack of a better term. E-Rod has not had a good season so far. He's been disappointed. And it kind of got lost in the fact that the Red Sox had two games they probably could have won, maybe should have won against the Astros. But E-Rod pitched great in this game, like against that vaunted lineup. And the thing is, I'm looking at his stats right now, and I think there is – there's a lot of reasons why we should be optimistic going forward for E-Rod. For example, his ERA is 5.04, I mean, which is bad, but his FIP, the underlying stuff, is 3.61. The xFIP is 3.90. It looks like he's been getting unlucky. His BABIP sits at 3.45, which is in no way sustainable. And if we start seeing more regression towards that 2.98 career number and those peripherals start coming in line, then yeah, this guy could be that, you know, middle of the rotation solid piece if he could just, you know, be more durable, go longer into games, and hopefully stay healthy. But
that's my biggest thing is, you know, I'm more concerned with the health of Eduardo Rodriguez than what the botch scores looked like in May. Yeah. You know, I think that's his biggest question. And my last finishing touch on the Houston series is we scored 10 runs over three games. I think if we meet again, we can expect to put up more runs than that, with all due respect to Garrett Cole and Wade Miley and the other talented pitchers that are on Houston staff. I think our offense is capable of more than that.
No, I 100% agree with you, especially Wade Miley. I guess Wade Miley's good now. Remember, didn't we give him up for Carson Smith? Things come back.
Yeah, and then
he got signed for nothing this offseason.
He did.
And they sucked with the Mariners, got cut, sucked with the Orioles, got cut. I think it was somewhere else, and now he became a god with the Astros. So this isn't a Red Sox-only problem. He's been pretty bad before.
A lot of teams missed on him.
He was bad with the Brewers?
He was good with the Brewers. He was.
Was he?
I thought he was, like, adequate. Miley was, yeah. Nothing to write home about.
Like, he existed.
He did what the Brewers needed him to do.
Well, he had a 2.57 ERA, apparently.
I was going to say, you need me to pull it up.
but hold up. He struck out 5 batters for 9 and walked 3.
that sucks, man.
but he's striking out 7 this year and walking 2, which is a lot better than
Why
5
does everyone three. Get good when they join the Astros?
I don't want to talk about it.
It's all that spin rate and whatever.
That's not true. JD Martinez, he wasn't too good with the Astros.
Well, that's different. That's before they made Altuve drink goat's blood or whatever it is they did to make everything go right over there.
Yeah, that was before. That was like their last mistake before they became the powerhouse that exists today. So that's cool. But can I circumvent E-Rod real quick? I had one final point. Yeah, they need E-Rod to stay healthy because they don't have a lot of depth in the rotation. I know we just had Mike Schwarren come up, right? That happened? Yeah, so that's exciting, but I still don't trust the depth. And I think Ryan Weber on, Wednesday, whenever they last played the Indians, kind of showed that he wouldn't be the guy who could fill in as a depth start while Evaldi's out as the fifth guy. So I think, you know, Erod staying healthy this year, and hopefully so Chris can feel, you know, good, get more innings than Chris Sale, or close to the same innings as Chris Sale. But we'll see. We'll see. And I think that's an important thing to monitor. But yeah, anyone have any final thoughts on the Astros series before we go into the Indian series and before I get a little mad?
Not the Astros series as much as just general pitching depth, but it's worth noting Brian Johnson is rehabbing in Portland. The first one didn't go that well, but don't look at stats for rehab starts. They're not trying to get outs. They're just trying to get their pitches back.
Right.
But I'd imagine he'd have, you know, 2, 3, maybe 4 more starts down there before he's ready to join the team. And say what you will about Brian Johnson, he's better than a lot of the guys currently on the roster. He's not great, but he proved last year he can be the fifth starter if you need him to be for a little bit.
Yeah, I remember back in the day when we were having the debates about Hector Velasquez or Brian Johnson. I was always on the Brian Johnson camp, so hopefully he can come back and be serviceable fifth guy, but we'll see. We'll see how that plays out. But let's move on to the Indian series, because I think we all have a lot to talk about with this one, because this was a series that I cannot explain enough should have been the Red Sox. First of all, the first game looked very promising. That was a 12-5 Boston victory. Things were feeling good. The Red Sox lineup looked unstoppable. And then the worst game I have seen all year happened on May 28th, 2019. Remember the day. Remember the freaking day. 7-5 loss the Red Sox endured after blowing the lead. They were up 3-0 in the seventh. Marcus Walden, one of the only other reliable pitchers besides Matt Barnes, gave up 2 runs. And then it was 3-2. Red Sox were like, you know what? That's okay. We're going to add 2 more on. 5-2 game. Bring in Ryan Brazier. And this is when we're going to start talking about Ryan Brazier. But we brought in Ryan Brazier, and he gave up a home run to Greg Allen. Greg Allen has a 386 OPS. It was his first home run. Greg Allen hit a home run. And then so did somebody else who's not Greg Allen. It was Perez. And 3 runs, no outs. Game blown. They brought in Lankins, and that was sad. That was sad when he came in. He could not throw a strike, throwing a bunch of cutters that didn't even make it on the plate. And then he has now been sent back down to AAA. But the thing that happened that really pissed me off was that Brazier, no outs, 3 earned runs. And then the next day it was 14-9. Red Sox offense firing on all cylinders, but alas, the Red Sox bullpen gave up 7 earned runs in 5 innings, or 4 innings, I think, 4 or 5 innings, and then the Ryan Weber gave up 7 runs in 4 innings too, and they went to all of their backup worst options in the bullpen, when if they had gone to maybe somebody better, and there are not a lot of great options in the Red Sox bullpen, don't get me wrong, but it might have been closer. So I'm going to start with Dave here, because I always start with Dave for the most part, and when I switch it up, it's weird, but Dave, talk to me about this series.
Yeah, I was wrong. I was wrong. Ryan Brazier sucks.
That's okay. All I needed to hear. We can move on. I'm kidding.
Yeah, so I will always love Ryan Brazier for what he did in 2018. And say what you will about batted ball luck. Yes, he got lucky, but that actually happened, what he did. So thank you, Ryan Brazier. You were good in 2018, and you got a little bit lucky, but I'm not going to hold that against you. Right, we probably don't win a World Series if he doesn't do what he does. However, 2019, Ryan Brazier has come back to earth. It's not great, and the bullpen itself is not great. And this was such an infuriating series to watch, because a team with no offense, they basically have Francisco Lindor and nobody else, acted like the 1927 Yankees against the Red Sox. And it was just maddening to watch, as this team, whose biggest issue going into the offseason was the bullpen, did nothing to address it, and then just watched their bullpen get lit up by one of the worst offenses in the American League. And it just, it astonishes me that going into the offseason, you had $6 million to throw at Steve Pierce, basically on day one of free agency, but you didn't have any money to sign even an average reliever. It's astonishing.
I saw on Twitter somewhere, I don't remember who tweeted it out, but they like showed all these really affordable, like, one-year deal.
Yeah, I think that was I think that was Justin Gonzalez. I don't know who he writes for, but he writes for somebody. He's a pretty good follow.
Yeah, and he like was listing all these like four or five guys the Red Sox easily could have signed. I remember at least two of them were Brad Brock and Greg Holland, who would have been very cheap. I think like each under $4 million or $5 million or whatever. Steve Pierce money essentially, and they're all doing very well, very serviceable. And I think we can know that the Red Sox need at least one more guy in the pen. So yeah, that's frustrating.
Even if Steve Pierce was playing at like 2018 Steve Pierce levels, I'd rather have the bullpen guy than the platoon first baseman, considering the current layout of the team. Like, I liked the Pierce signing when it first happened, but that's because I assumed they were going to sign somebody. They didn't.
Yeah, I didn't think it was going to be an either-or situation where we were forced to not sign anyone in the bullpen or Steve Pierce. I thought the Steve Pierce contract was made sense. I thought Steve Pierce was going to have a pretty big year. He just left the game with back spasms, by the way. We'll monitor that situation.
They're calling it day-to-day now, but I wouldn't be surprised if it's a DL stint.
Yeah, so now Mitch Moreland's still on the mend, so now it's probably Chavis at first and Nuñez and Holt at second. I don't need
and
to see
And our Lord and
Eduardo
Savior Sam Travis rising from the ashes.
Might be Bryce Prince, who knows? But Ryan Brazier, one more point because I have to dig in a little bit because I'm a jerk. 562 FIP, 197 BABIP right now. It should be worse than it is. He's got 397 ERA. So we'll see how he progresses. But like I think of now, like I mean, yeah, Ryan Brazier was okay last year in terms of underlying stuff. Right now it's just completely gone, completely 180 and
he's
I don't
taken
trust
a huge step back.
Yeah, and I don't trust him in any close game situation, and I don't think there's any evidence that the Red Sox should, except for the fact that everyone else in the bullpen sucks. But right now, I'm going Walden over him, I'm going Hembry over him, and I'm going Barnes over him. And then after that, like I'm being mean to Brazier, but I don't know if there's anyone else I trust like more than Brazier besides that, like those three. Like I don't know, man. It's a really bad situation.
There are so many reasons I hate myself for agreeing with every word you say. From my natural instinct to hate Brazier slander, like just hating you saying all the bad stuff, to the objective part of me that realizes he's terrible, but can't argue what you're saying because everyone else sucks too.
Yeah, it sucks, man. It sucks. Yeah. This bullpen needs some work. Julian, I'm going to give this one to you. Switch it up here. Julian, what do you think about this Indian series? And then you can dig into the Ryan Brazier fiasco if you would like.
I mean, you guys pretty much hit the nail on the head. The one thing I'll sort of stray from is that I think Cleveland's offense is a little bit better than one of the worst in the American League. I mean, Jose Ramirez has been off to a slow start. Lindor is just getting back, but I don't think they're as bad. And they were capable of putting up runs last year. They're capable of, you know, putting runs on nights where everything goes right for them this year. The bullpen absolutely lost this series. And up until this point, it wasn't as bad as, you know, the Red Sox fan base expected it to be. I was reading up on an article from MLBTradeRumors.com. It was written by Jeff Todd talking about the question surrounding the Red Sox bullpen. And he throws up some numbers talking about how our ERA as a bullpen is in the top third of the league and how a lot of the peripheral numbers aren't as bad. You know, it seems like a lot of the bullpen problems happen when other things are going right and it sort of collapses. You know, Murphy's Law has been in full effect. But I am going to jump on the pile as far as Ryan Brazier goes. And it's not a personal indictment of him so much as it's a testament to how lucky he got last year between his BABIP and the defense that was supporting him and, you know, just everything sort of clicking right at the perfect time. I would say, you know, in addition to Barnes, Hembry, and Walden ahead of him. I would trust Brandon Workman over.
I forgot about Workman. I was just going to say that. I forgot about
him. You know, I think that he's worthy of a spot on the 25-man depth chart when healthy. I don't know why Tyler Thornburg's still on the 40-man roster. I understand he's on the IL right now, but we need to cut our losses just as a gesture to the Sox fan base that Dombrowski can admit he's wrong. But as far as keeping him in there, the another stat that really caught my eye was that our bullpen has been tagged for a 5.31 ERA with 1.7 home runs per nine against left-handed hitters. So if we can find that lefty situational guy, or if we're ready to call Darwinson Hernandez up, or if Josh Taylor can take a step forward. He's pitching in tonight's game. He threw a scoreless inning. At this point, I mean, you know, I'd be willing to give him a shot with a month in the majors and see if he can stick. You know, we think that guys don't belong, but then Ryan Brazier appears and has a phenomenal year. Another stat that caught my eye looking into things today is just how good Heath Hembree has been the past month. Someone that I was ready to give up on going into this year and has pitched a phenomenal May, only given up one earned run. It was a home run. And another stat that caught my eyes was small sample size, but in the ninth inning, he has yet to give up an earned run. It's been like six innings or something like that. I don't have it right in front of me right at this moment, but you know, for all the faults that guys who have been reliable in innings six through eight, the Waldens, the Wortmans, the Barnes, you know, maybe we need to take a deeper dive into these splits and see if, you know, Hembree can be the ninth inning guy and trust, you know, these other relief pitchers who have had success in the innings leading up to that, you know, doing what they do. I noticed that the batting average against Hembree in the ninth inning was like ridiculously low. And there's, as much as there's a different mentality to being a pitcher in the ninth inning, there's a different mentality in 2019 as far as hitters approaching the plate. They're all looking to go yard when there's less than three outs left. And if Hembree is able to capitalize on that, then we shouldn't be above giving him a shot at that ninth inning spot, especially when guys like Brazier and Walden and Barnes have sort of failed to step up and do it.
Yeah. I mean, I think to an extent I do agree with you, especially when you're talking about the bullpen has not been as bad as it's made out to be. And I know I kind of lambasted them, and I do really think they need another guy in there, and I'm confident in that. But they have been okay. They're like in the top 33% of teams in F WAR and FIP and ERA. But when you digest this player by player, and I know Walden's been great, and Barnes has been good, and Workman's been good, but Hembree has been a little lucky, and even though I prophesized that Hembree would be better than Brazier this year, and I'll keep saying this, it's not that I trusted Hembree, it's I thought Brazier was bad. And Hembree, just like Brazier did last year, he's got 258 BABIP and a 435 FIP, 525 XFIP. So I don't know if I trust him in the ninth inning. I think he definitely moves ahead of Brazier on the depth chart, but I don't trust him yet as a sustainable guy in the bullpen. And Hector Velasquez really struggled, and that really hurt. Though he struck out 10.2 guys in the bullpen, which really surprised me because his strikeout per nine last year was five.
See, now,
so
here's my thing with the type weird of pitcher Velasquez is, I don't want him striking out that many guys.
I don't either, but that's weird, isn't it? Isn't that weird?
I mean, not really, because if you think about it, like, Velasquez needs ground balls in order to work.
He does.
He doesn't have the stuff to get it past guys on three – three straight pitches. So the way I see it, if his strikeout count is high, that means he's not inducing ground balls. Guys are hitting line drives, hitting fly balls that are landing in gaps, going off the wall. So just by default, like, I'm sure his like K per nine is high, but if you look at the percentage of batters he's striking out, and I don't have the numbers in front of me, I'm sure that's pretty low. It's more just a reflection of, this is the only way I can get outs instead of I am getting outs in an efficient rate.
No, but I do agree with that. I just didn't think he was capable of striking out 10 guys per nine because I didn't think he had that low pass you stuff or the put away stuff, quite frankly, to get it by him. But yeah, you're right. His ground ball rate has fallen from 49.8 last year to 40.2 this year. So yeah, it's been a significant drop off. And I mean, like, his FIP is basically the same as it was last year. But that's just because he's added strikeouts at the expense of command. But no, I don't trust
Velasquez. FIP isn't the best way to judge guys like Hector Velasquez.
Oh, ground ball guy. Yeah, of course. I'm just saying, like, as an aside, by FIP, he's just as good. But no, he is the Red Sox lost. Wow, 4-1. Yankee, Aroldis Chapman just put him away. Red Sox are only one game over 500 now. How sullen I am right now. But yeah, Colton Brewer. He shouldn't be as bad as he is, despite a 5.87 ERA. Underlying stuff looks okay. But there, for the most part, like Barnes, Walden, and even Brandon Workman, I'm kind of squeamish on with the 3.59 xFIP, walking six guys for nine, though he's been better than a lot of people. They need somebody in my mind to kind of, in these later innings, have that reliable cog that they don't have, and they had last year at times with Joe Kelly, even though Joe Kelly was an experience in and of itself.
Look at him with the Dodgers. It wouldn't be better.
I know. But I'm just talking about 28 Joe Kelly peak. I don't know. And then with Craig Kimbrel last year. And then even you had Ryan Brazier last year, who looked like he was a capable setup man. So there is not that guy after Matt Barnes. And I'm not even quite frankly sold on Marcus Walden in that role. I think he's good, but I'd be cautious, and it just doesn't seem like the Red Sox have reliability when it comes to crucial innings, because they want to put Matt Barnes in the most high-leverage situation, which I agree with, but when you have the ninth inning open, it's now going to a smorgasbord of guys who are probably underqualified to handle the role in the first place.
Do you want to go nuts?
Oh, Dave, I always want to go nuts.
All right, let's go nuts. Durbin Feltman, let's make it happen. And before you look at his numbers, let me talk. Let me talk before you look at his numbers.
We're going nuts here tonight, folks. Episode 51. It's about to get crazy. Go ahead.
Okay, so 18.1 innings, 6.38 ERA, 5.56 FIP. Atrocious. I agree. However, if you look at his game logs, he's had two outings where he's combined to allow eight runs. That's going to throw things off a little bit. Since May 11th, he's allowed only one run in 8.1 innings. So it's a 2.16 ERA. He struck out nine. He's only walked one. That's good for a 2.97 FIP. And the thing about his April numbers is you have to remember he was pitching in Portland. April in Portland gets really weird statistically speaking because it's 40 degrees, and I'm not exaggerating. I lived through it. More often than not, it was raining and 40. It was miserable, and I hated it. And you can't pitch in that and get results, especially when you're a fastball guy like that. So Feltman had a pretty uneven April. He had two atrocious outings at the start of May, but the last month or so, he's been pitching really well, looking like the guy you want him to be. So if you're really desperate and you really want to just aim for the upside, balls to the wall, go nuts, Durbin Feltman.
I have two follow-up questions. One, what is the temperature like now for you?
Right now it's 70. Today was a beautiful day.
See, we got like 96. I don't know, Julian, you got like the 96 days this week, right? The burning skin marinating.
Oh yeah, silly hot and humid down here. Yeah. I love it that way.
I love it too. I love it too, TVH.
I take that so much. I had seven straight months of 20 degrees, and it was the worst.
Yeah,
this was a bad winter, even by Maine standards.
Yeah, it was brutal here too. But, like, you know, nothing compared to you.
Piggybacking on what Dave said, and just a shameless plug, since I referenced this in my most recent article, the home road splits for Durbin Feltman in AA are silly. He has given up like one hit and one walk all season on the road. So I think it very much has something to do with Portland. And
it absolutely does. And this isn't a phenomenon exclusive to Feltman. Like every year there's like if someone tries to read too hard into like, oh no, prospect X is having a down year, he can't live up to expectations because he started AA in Portland. It's like, no, it's April, and objectively speaking, Portland should have a short season league, and like Lowell should get the Sea Dogs because the weather's just so not fit for baseball in April. I love that we have the Sea Dogs, but objectively, like, we don't have the weather to support April baseball.
Yeah, and while I would warmly welcome the idea of Shane Green or Ken Giles walking through the door at a reasonable price, I think that there are guys in the system like Durbin Feltman, like Darwin's and Hernandez, like Jay Groom, who should be treated like top 100 prospects, even if they aren't on that list. And we shouldn't get overzealous at the trade deadline trying to, you know, sell what's left of the farm for, you know, finishing pieces, rentals for 2019. Yeah. So, you know, I would say that the bullpen, you know, I'd like to see it addressed, but I don't want to mortgage the future for a roll of the dice.
Yeah, I'd agree with
says,
that.
Hey.
Shut up.
That'll be a stain forever. After you guys made that case, though, I have to say that I really do think that, Durbin Feltman might be the answer to come up. So, good job. You guys convinced me.
Yep. You can't just look at the straight stats, especially in small samples in Portland.
Yeah, a lot of players don't play in that extreme climate, so it didn't even really cross my mind. But
there's roughly 25 that do.
Yeah. You're right. But like Maine cold compared to like, I don't know, Ohio cold, I feel like is completely different too. I feel like Maine's much colder.
I'm not exaggerating when I say it snowed midway through Maine in certain parts of Maine.
Yeah. So, I'm willing to say.
Like I was flying down to New York. I got a text from my fiance, and she's like, "How's the weather?" And I'm like, "It's good." She's like, "Great, it's snowing." I'm like, "Oh my god."
You can always move down to North Carolina, and then we could do the podcast, you know, from some like stable location if you want.
Yeah,
that'd be cool.
Talk to me in a few years.
Okay. I'll let you know. You know, it's the architecture business is really booming down here too. If you're gonna be like engineering, engineering, and if you're gonna be designing buildings, isn't that?
They need us a lot more than I need them.
Okay. All right. Okay. So, Chris, you've been very patient throughout this while we've been waddling to get to your turn here. But Chris, what do you think about the Red Sox bullpen? Do you have anything you would like to weigh in on this so far?
The bullpen is trash, and they just kind of need to blow it up. That's where I'm at. And the reason for that is because I'm going to go back to the Cleveland series here for you.
You can do that.
The Cleveland Indians scored 26 runs on the Red Sox pitching staff, all right? 26 runs from the – I'm going to give you some stats here, some very fun stats. Slugging percentage for Cleveland Indians, .369. That puts them 27th in the major leagues, just ahead of Detroit, San Francisco, and Miami. Great winners there.
Good company.
OPS puts them 26th, a tick above Toronto, Detroit, San Francisco, and Miami. Wow, big surprise there. And just because Pat loves WRC+.
Yeah, thanks.
That also puts them at – they have an 80 WRC+. That puts them at 26, just above Toronto, Detroit, San Francisco, and Miami.
So they're not very good.
They bad.
No matter
– I'm noticing a theme.
They're 26th in home runs. They're 26th in home runs, only better than Pittsburgh, San Francisco, Detroit, and Miami. Like, all right. You're better than Miami. Great. Like, it's kind of like, it's kind of a bigger thing on the Indians.
Sea Dogs are better than Miami.
Yeah, exactly. But it's kind of a bigger thing for the Indians because they were just like this offseason. They're like, you know what? We're going to roll with what we got. We're going to trade away Encarnacion and basically kind of sort of tear it down. They called it retooling, but they were just trying to go cheap. And this is what you get when you go cheap. And I just... It's inexcusable to give up that many runs to that. That's just where I'm at.
Yeah, we're, so, weird tangent. Oh, keep going, keep going.
Oh, go ahead.
No,
go ahead.
No, okay.
Okay, if you're gonna fight, I got something.
Well, I'm just gonna get angry at Cleveland ownership. This is a Red Sox podcast.
My only thing it was actually about the Indians, and I don't know why I care, but I feel like the Indians started like downsizing and letting Michael Brantley go and Encarnacion go. It was because they thought they could still win the division because the Twins
thought the AL Central would be handled.
Yeah, and for some reason the Twins are now the best record in freaking baseball.
Although,
in
fairness to the Indians,
they were a wild card team in 2017.
Yeah, they were.
I'm not as surprised by them as everybody else.
Yeah, but I mean, Indians knew the Twins would be this good, do you think they would have changed anything? Because realistically, they're not an Edwin Encarnacion away from matching how good the Twins are right now.
How about the loss of Michael Brantley, they built
their roster.
That's something that's also overlooked.
Yeah, they built their roster based on the assumption that Jose Ramirez would continue being an MVP candidate,
and
Lindor would be Lindor and not get hurt. So the second anything happened, you're screwed. That's what they built their. Just listen to the lineup from Tuesday. It's like Lindor, you know that name. Mercado, do you know that name? I don't.
He's good though this year.
Yeah, he is, but Santana, I know that name. Luplau, I don't know that name.
I think we're getting a little bit sidetracked.
Yeah.
No.
This is the Cleveland Unfiltered podcast.
I don't care about the Indians.
I care about the Indians because it makes more sense that the Red Sox shouldn't have sucked against them. That's why I care about the Indians.
All right, let Chris continue.
Because they were 3-10 in the last – no, not 3-10. 3-7 in the last 10 going into that series. And then the Red Sox are just like, here you go.
Do you want to continue name dropping, or are we done?
I continue name dropping. I mean, there's a guy named Perez. There's Bowers, who was in Tampa Bay. He sucks. And then freaking Greg Allen over there.
Yeah, I talked about Greg Allen.
It's just one of those stupid things where it's just like they had no business losing to that team, but they did. So great job, Red Sox bullpen, for losing all those games.
Yeah.
Now I have breaking news.
I should say both those games.
Oh, Dave's got some breaking news. Hot off the oven.
Yes. The Portland Sea Dogs have set a franchise record for runs and hits and total bases in today's game. They beat Binghamton 20-2.
Dang.
Bobby Dalbec hit at least two home runs. Tate Mathenly hit two home runs. I'm just going through their Twitter and they literally Bobby Dalbec hit a third. Oh no. Nope, three total. They had so many that the Twitter account could not keep up. So, good job, Sea Dogs. Oh, and Tanner Huck started, and so he pitched well. Go, Tanner Huck.
Oh, wow, that's cool. Good for the Sea Dogs. While the Red Sox are losing to the Yankees, at least we have the Portland Sea Dogs to pick us up, you know, when we're down.
Yeah.
Not the hero we deserve, but the hero we need.
And they're going to get Duran pretty soon, too, so they're going to be fun to watch.
Yeah, you got to go to some games, man.
I definitely do. They're in town next week, and I think I'm going to go to one.
Do it. All right, let's segue here into the last two topics we have. So the first, I'll just start with JBJ, and then we'll go to Dustin Pedroia. But Jackie Bradley Jr., we kind of alluded to this. He has gone on a very hot streak. I don't have the exact numbers, but last time we talked, he had zero home runs. We were talking about him being traded and all this kind of scenarios and how the hot streak was coming, but it didn't really, some were saying it didn't negate his bad streaks, but he now, his OPS is up to 600. He got two base knocks tonight, and now his OPS is at 612, which it's not bad. It's actually better than it was at this time last year. So he's starting to get hot again, and this is obligatory of JBJ's, kind of life. But what do you guys think about JBJ's resurgence? Do you think this is now the time to capitalize and trade him? I know the answer for one of you. I'm pretty sure I know the answer for the second of you and the third of you. I have no idea. So this is going to be interesting. Let's start with Julian since he's a fresh voice. Julian, what's going to happen to Jackie Bradley Jr.? Or what should the Red Sox do with him?
So I don't think Jackie's going anywhere, and I don't think he should go anywhere unless Dave Dombrowski is blown off his feet with another team that just secretly has a man crush on him. And that's because his trade value isn't going to be significantly raised by 2, 3, 4 consecutive weeks of a hot streak. I think that, you know, we should trust that his defense is going to improve. He's had a couple ugly plays early on in the season, but that's not characteristic of what he provides. He's a gold glover, and honestly, I'm surprised it took him till last year to win a gold glove. He could have won every year since he's been in the major leagues. I as an eternal optimist, went digging for some stats, and I found some juicy numbers that I think you all are going to like.
Yes.
On first pitch counts, he is 11 for 24, hitting .458. He's hitting .615, .843, with 4 doubles and a home run in 1-0 counts, and in 0-1 counts, he's even hitting .500. So, Jackie, if you're listening, start hacking early in the count, because that's when you're doing the damage. And I am, you know, I'm pulling for him because I think his offense is better than what his numbers are showing. I mean, he is notoriously streaky, but his defense and what he provides was invaluable. I mean, he saved games with his glove last year. I think that's going to come in hand down the stretch again. I think the roster management for Dave Dombrowski and Alex Cora is so much better when you have three talented outfielders as good as the Killer Bees are, and that allows you to stick with three, you know, 3.5 outfielders if you include JD Martinez and sort of pad the pitching staff and the young infield. So I'm keeping with the, you know, I'm staying the course if I'm Dave Dombrowski. Like I said, unless you get knocked off your feet with you know, a killer all-star reliever with multiple years of control or something ridiculous like Mitch Haniger. But I don't see that happening, and I think that, you know, last year's ALCS MVP is gonna see better numbers in the hottest months of summer than he's seen so far.
Thank you, Julian. That was very elegantly said. Dave, what would you have a response to that?
You got a shot, JBJ, but I agree with Julian in the fact that I'd be astonished if there's a single team out there that still thinks there's a top prospect in there. If some team still thinks that Jackie Bradley Jr. can be like this great prospect who's once prodigized to be, trade him, like capitalize on that value. Plug a center fielder in there. You're marginally worse in 2019, but I'd argue it's worth it in the long run. However, having Jackie Bradley is better than having nothing at all, because the defense is always there. It is infuriating as he is to watch. That can be there. Like, that's entirely possible that when the season matters, when the playoffs comes around, that Jackie's bat is on one of his hot streaks. If it is, you're happy you have him, because Jackie at his best, you're going to find better than that at this point in the season. So I'd say if you can get something really good in return for Jackie, sell high. But if not, just hold on to him. He's your center fielder, and, you know, you'll probably let him go in free agency.
Okay. Yeah, I would echo everything that Julian said in my response. But what about you, Chris? Are you still on the trade JBJ train?
So, defensive run saved is not like Jackie Bradley Jr.
This year.
This year.
It didn't like him last year either.
We all know that.
His UZR was better than his DRS, and they were very torn on him. And we, I think it's pretty obvious that JBJ's a good defender.
But even still, I think somebody said last year, it might have been Jackie Bradley himself, that he said he didn't have his best defensive year, and he won a gold glove. So I just think that's funny. Side nugget. I am in the same camp where, like, at this point, if you're not going to get something that's going to impact you this year and next year or something like that, don't trade him. He's the most infuriating person on the entire planet to watch, and I will forever be infuriated, and I will forever hate the people that are like, he's getting on his hot streak, it's turning around. He's not going to turn around, sorry.
Then he hates me.
By the end of June, he's going to turn back into a pumpkin. So that's where I'm at. It is what it is at this point.
To define turn it around, he's going to get hot, but then he's going to get cold again because he's Jackie Bradley, and that's what he does.
He's gonna turn into Cinderella for a little while, and he's going to turn back into a pumpkin. Or Cinderella's character.
Just hope you catch the good Jackie at the end of the... In the playoffs in September. And frankly, I mean, if you say you should go in, you like when 2019 ends, you should go into 2020 with a better or safer option than Jackie, fine. But what are you going to do about it right now?
You know what? The slipper fit in the ALCS, and that's all that matters. I'm just using your Cinderella metaphor. But no, yeah, I mean, JBJ, he's capped at like a maybe slightly above average, below average offensive guy. Never going to light the world on fire. You need defensive value to bring him up to a like 2-3-1 player. And this year, his defense has not been good. Neither has Mookie Betts. It's weird for the Red Sox defensive outfield. Maybe it's because it's cold. I don't know, man. But yeah, JBJ had one of his best UZR years last year defensively. And I think he deserved that gold glove. He should have had a gold glove a while ago. But yeah, JBJ, I think will be fine in the lineup. I think he might be your worst hitter in the lineup, but Red Sox have a good lineup and he can be valuable with a 700 OPS and good defense. So I don't try to trade him because I don't think you would get equivocal value, especially for a center fielder, which is a very scarce position. And if free agency in 2020 comes and he wants a lot of money, then probably don't sign him. But I don't think he's going to want a lot of money. I think you could get him back at a relatively cheapish deal. So I don't know. I mean, he will be kind of older and defense kind of erodes at a certain point at around the 30 mark. So we'll see. We'll cross the bridge when it comes to it. But yeah, JBJ, happy to see him starting to come back to the hot streak land because it's fun watching Cinderella JBJ and not Pumpkin JBJ.
Well, it's like Clay Buchholz too. Like this is the exact same conversation that was had with Clay Buchholz. Every time he went on a run, it's like trade him. But the problem is he's got more value to the Red Sox than he does to any other team, basically.
Yeah.
At this point, it's kind of like with Clay Buchholz. He's more valuable to the team he's on than if you tried to trade him, which you could get back in a trade equivalent.
And Clay Buchholz can't jump over the fence to save a game.
Ooh, you want a random side note?
Has Clay Buchholz done that?
No, it's about Drew Pomeranz.
Talking sure.
About people that
he did bad today.
Oh, yeah, that's what I was talking about.
He did awful today. I saw that. It was like 8 earned runs in 1 inning, right? Or something like that.
It's something like that, yeah. Just
it was something bad.
That was about right.
Drew Pomeranz, man. Drew Pomeranz.
Something
missed
bad.
That. Missed that guy's demeanor on the mound. Really miss it.
Real hard on his sleeve kind of guy. Yeah. Let's talk about Dustin Pedroia for the last thing that we're going to talk about. Dustin Pedroia, obviously the news is that he has been transferred to the 60-day IL, hurt his knee in his rehab assignment, and there is a good chance he will never play again. A lot of people are saying some pretty brash and ungrateful things about Pedroia, and it's really kind of rocking some people, but it's just sad, man. This is the guy I grew up with. I mean, I'm younger than you guys. I'm 21. And, you know, my formative years were, you know, from like 2007 to 2016, watching the Red Sox and watching Dustin Pedroia as the MVP, as the rookie of the year, as the perennial gold glove and silver slugger. So I grew up with Dustin Pedroia as my favorite player. For a long time, he was the only Red Sox jersey I owned. And you love his demeanor out on the field. You love how much he grinded and how passionate he was. And it sucks that he's gone. It's like this nostalgia. Like I felt this acutely with David Ortiz too. But Pedroia, and now that life feels like the old guard is completely gone, and wow, we have a lot of good new guard. It's sad because Pedroia was such an integral part of my experience watching the Red Sox, and part of the reason I love the Red Sox. So it definitely strikes a chord with me, and I'm very grateful for all the good memories he's given me as an avid Red Sox and sports fan, and there probably will never be another second baseman like him, and I can't wait until he gets inducted into the Red Sox Hall of Fame, because man, for that peak, man, there was no second baseman I'd rather have. So this is sad, but it's cool that Chavis is coming in and kind of picking off where he left off in a sense. So yeah, Pedroia, I'm sad to see this, and he's not officially retired, and he's thinking about what he's going to do going forward. But yeah, it certainly seems like this may be the end, and I hope maybe some way if he wants to try it again and come back, and definitely let him, but it's not looking too hot, and I hope, I wish him nothing but the best in trying to figure this out. What about you, Dave?
Yeah, I mean, I think you said it all there, Pat. Dustin Pedroia, what more could you want from a guy? He was everything everybody wants when they draft prospects. He's a homegrown talent, gave everything he had, literally destroyed his body for his team, took a team-friendly deal multiple times, his last contract, and idiots are complaining about, oh, Pedroia's making so much money. He left at least $50 million on the table to sign a team-friendly deal so he could stick around Fenway. Anyone complaining about his contract is a moron who doesn't know what they're talking about. And speaking of morons that don't know what they're talking about, anyone who says Dustin Pedroia wasn't the definition of a team player, just shun them out of your lives, delete their numbers, burn their house down. They don't deserve the light of day from you because they are wrong. They're a fool. And if they mention the stupid thing from 2017, Dustin Pedroia was calling out Farrell for being an incompetent moron. After Machado slid him to Pedroia, the press conference after, Pedroia said, don't make a big deal out of this. I don't want this escalating, a.k.a. he was being an adult. Farrell, being an incompetent child, decided to tell Barnes to throw at Machado. Barnes probably was aiming for the body. Ball slipped, went to the head. So when Pedroia was saying that didn't come from me, he was saying my manager's a dumbass, not Matt Barnes is a bad person. So, yeah, he was calling out a manager who's no longer with the team and got fired for being a bad manager.
Yeah, I think you talked about that period of time that people used to tarnish Pedroia's legacy well. And I feel like
I'm not a Farrell guy, if you couldn't catch
that. No, I'm not either. I mean, I feel like that's just that I don't think anyone should be a John Farrell guy. I mean, that was a really weird time in my life. yeah. Chris, what about you? What are your thoughts on the Dustin Pedroia stuff that's going on right now?
I think it's over. He seemed pretty like, you know, he said, I don't know if I'm going to come back and blah, blah, blah. But and that leaves the door open. But I just don't see him coming back. I mean, he literally said that he can't play every day. And it's one of those things where it's like, it's almost like he needs to step back for him to realize that he can't do it anymore. That's what it kind of seems like, as if I'm like some psychology major or something like that. but
double major.
Yeah, right. But it's sad because his energy. I'll miss the kangaroo hops before every single pitch like that. That was fun to watch. It's one of those things where it's like I go back to where his knee originally got injured, and I hate that the guy got paid vastly more than Dustin Pedroia did. And that's where I'm at. I mean, Pedroia gave the Red Sox everything. He literally gave him basically his whole part of his body, his leg. You know, here, have my leg, and people are still down on him. It's like he's gonna make like what, $25 million after this year or something like that.
Like, I think it's $20 million a year for the next couple.
No, I think it's like 15. It might be 30 million. Yeah,
it's $15 million a year.
Yeah. Oh. So either way, it's just like it's peanuts compared to like what Prince Fielder when he had his issue and walked away. But it's just like if you're complaining about Dustin Pedroia, you just don't know what's going on. And that's where I'm at.
That's all there is to it.
What about you, Julian? Do you have any takes about Dustin Pedroia?
Oh yeah, I've been waiting to jump in on this one. And for anyone who wants to be critical about the payroll or what Dustin Pedroia is making, I'll remind you that Pablo Sandoval is getting paid more by the Boston Red Sox this year. So let's just go ahead and write that one off. The Boston Red Sox have plenty of money. I'm not feeling bad for the owners or the people writing those checks. And Dustin Pedroia has absolutely earned the right to go out his way. If he wants to have a David Wright-esque send-off where he comes back for a series and you know, we give him that chance to have a few games, go out with some dignity, he has earned that right. After David Ortiz, he was the second jersey that I owned. I mean, he's the only person in my lifetime, and I'm 28 years old, with the, you know, before Mookie Betts last year, he was the only Red Sox in our lifetime to win an MVP. We have four World Series in our lifetime now and two MVPs. But, you know, before last year, Dustin Pedroia was that guy. And he was a 5'9", you know, scrappy team player, all effort. I mean, you can talk about, you know, the more talented athletic second basemen of our era, but Dustin Pedroia was a Boston gritty, just personified everything about our generation of the Red Sox. It's why I fell in love with the team growing up in the middle of nowhere, Virginia. And, you know, guys like him and Pedro and Manny and Poppy, but, you know, I think he has absolutely earned the right to take all the time he needs to figure out how he wants to, you know, continue or end his career. And, you know, I hope that there's a position for him in the coaching staff or in the front office after his career, or even if he's just going to be an ambassador, something like what David Ortiz is doing right now. He has earned that. And, you know, anyone who says otherwise is just short-sighted and thinking about, you know, all the wrong things that make up an organization, not just a 25-man roster, not just a team to win for tomorrow, but what, you know, Pedroia has given to this franchise. He deserves the respect that, you know, that I'm sure the Henrys and everybody who's a decision maker in Boston will give him.
Yeah, beautifully said too. I think we're all in agreement that we love Dustin Pedroia and we wish him nothing but the best, and we'll see where this goes. But if this is the end, man, it's been a hell of a ride. It's been a hell of a ride. But yeah, with that, we're actually going to be finishing up with the 51st episode of the Red Sox Unfiltered podcast. Per usual, let's give our departing thoughts to the listeners. Dave, what's your departing thought for tonight?
Departing thought, Kyle Hart made his AAA debut, I think, 2 days ago now. Complete game shutout, 8 strikeouts, no walks, 5 hits. Obviously, that's fantastic. He was an all-star for AA last year, and I mean, his pitch tool isn't that impressive, but he's making the most of it. And he's definitely a guy who I'm monitoring in Pawtucket. If he can keep being good, maybe he could earn a spot as a back end part of that bullpen.
Now, Dave, you always got the awesome minor league nuggets for us for your departing thought. Chris, what about you? What kind of nuggets are you going to drop here for your goodbye?
I just need the Red Sox to start playing better at some point. It's no longer that. It's just early. It's just May. Well, now it's June. And with June comes, well, we start looking at the playoffs and the playoff picture and everything like that. And the Red Sox, if they continue playing terrible and the bullpen keeps giving everything up and whatnot, they could find themselves on the outside looking in and having to play for something in September. And that's not anything that they probably want to do. They have 16 games in June against non-playoff teams, so it's time for them to, you know, figure it out, basically.
No, I was going to rip that off your notes and use it as my departing thought.
Too bad.
Julian, what about you? You got a departing thought for the listeners?
Going off of the other parting note that David gave us, I'm going to say, as someone who fancies himself as a farm system connoisseur, don't trade away the hopes of 2020, 2021, and 2022 chasing 2019. We see what Detroit looks like right now and what they're going to look like for the next couple of years, and I don't want Dave Dombrowski doing that to our franchise. So try and seek out improvements in the bullpen, maybe a fourth outfielder at a reasonable price at the trade deadline, but don't give away the important pieces of our future.
Feel free to give away Nick Northcutt.
Yeah, I'd be okay with that.
So my departing thought is, because we've had a lot of attention on multiple guys in the lineup and all the team in general who've done well, but I feel like it's important to note still, and we've talked about this a little bit, just how good of a year Xander Bogaerts is having, because the guy has a just 134 WRC plus, doing exactly what he did last year. As Dave mentioned before this game, he led the team in WRC plus. That's probably going to change as Devers hit a home run tonight. But the guy has a 2.5 WAR coming into the game. That is ninth in the league. Xander Bogaerts has probably been this team's best player, and he hasn't done it in the most flashy ways, but Bogaerts has been really good, and I just want to continue to shed a spotlight on that because he's not, again, doing it in flashy ways, so it doesn't really come to the forefront of your mind, but make no mistake about it. Bogaerts is continuing to have one of his best years, and he is probably the best Red Sox in 2019. So don't forget that. Bogaerts, you're doing great. Keep doing you. Also, when did we start this departing thought thing? Like when did we decide? I was just thinking that. Like, when did we do? We got to like go back in the archives and see when this started, because we just like kind of decided that we would do this at the end of every episode.
Dude, I'm just along for the ride. Whatever you talk, I kind of
know. Zone out. Yeah. So that'll do it for that episode. This episode, then. As always, please. Please go on RedSoxUnfiltered.com and check our amazing content on there. We have daily recaps, we have fun opinion articles, and many, many more amenities. Also, check out Twitter at BoSoxUnfiltered. That's our Twitter handle. We tweet a lot. Chris, Dave, and I tweet there. Gets a little crowded sometimes conflicting opinions, but it's very entertaining. And our Facebook page, RedSoxUnfiltered, for some reason, it's been getting a lot of likes recently. Don't know why. It's like growing exponentially in the month of May. But, you know, I'm here for the ride. I like it. And, please listen to this podcast, because you could do it on plenty of platforms, including Anchor, Spotify, Stitcher, iTunes, other places. And if our lovely affiliate, The Grueling Truth, decides to post the podcast on their many platforms, you'll also hear us on iHeartRadio, among others. So, please go check them out. Go check out this podcast on many platforms. And yeah, enjoy it, guys. We're happy you came to listen today. And I hope, you know, you guys were enjoying it. And I hope next time we speak, that the Red Sox will have miraculously taken 2 or 3 from the Yankees. And then they will play the rest of the season like cruising. So thanks, guys. And as always,
I need to just do like a blooper
reel. I'm gonna create a blooper set.
Because Chelsea's gonna clean the guinea pig out, and the cat really likes to kill the guinea pig. It's like his favorite hobby.
Has he killed it before?
He certainly tried. Like literally every time the guinea pig's like not in his cage and Sirius has a chance, he just like goes and like tries to bite him.
Are you serious?
Damn. Yeah, murder is in this guy's nature, so.
Yeah, you know, I had a cat once kill, like, a couple of hermit crabs one time, knocked the enclosure over, and then just took them out of their shell and ate it, so that was weird. Yeah.